This Cup of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trekfm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints, featuring original illustrations by Tobu Ushii.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge. And you're listening to Trek FM.
T. Earl Grey, hot.
Welcome, everyone, and it's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our Trek FM's dedicated TNG show. I'm Daniel Prue, sitting in the center chair this week, joined by my two co-hosts, as always. After being stuck on a planet for 8 years after a transporter malfunction, we have Darren Moser. Darren, how are you? Have you painted anything spectacular for us this week?
I painted, no, actually, due to that transporter malfunction, I can no longer see the color red. So it actually makes it very difficult to paint. But I also have an irrational fear of people with beards.
Okay. We also have with us this week the ship's top trombonist, Philip Gilfus. Mm-hmm. Philip, what's going on in 10-4? Do you have any special concerts for us or anything like that?
I'm doing all right, Daniel. You know, nothing picks up the ladies like an instrument. And if you know how to swing it, you'll get them. So I'm having a good time here in 10 Forward and belting up some good tunes, and all things are going groovy here on Deck 10.
Excellent, excellent. So if our listeners may not have been able to tell, we are actually doing another character profile. We have done Picard and jumped straight over to Data. So we kind of skipped Riker, right? Commander William Thomas Riker, who's kind of important on the show. So I thought it would be a good time to talk about Commander Riker, who is a very interesting person, a very interesting character, no matter how you look at him, right? We have the original series where Spock is the first officer, but he kind of has another role. So he doesn't, you know, he serves two functions on that show. But TNG kind of chooses to separate that character, that function, into two separate people. So in TNG, we have Commander Riker. His main function is second in command, right? Which is very different. So what do you guys, I mean, let's just start off with like kind of a base. How do you guys feel about Commander Riker? Like, I know some people, most people like him, I think, at least a little bit. And some people are okay with him. But Darren, what are your initial impressions of Commander Riker?
Well, like you said, it's an interesting comparison to Spock, because like Spock is, you know, the first officer, but he's also the science officer. And often his role seems to be more science-based, whereas Riker is definitely the XO. He's the one, you know, Picard says the command, Riker says the command, and then it gets done. You know, he's that part of the chain, and he's often, you know, pointing things out to Picard. He's always has Picard's back. He obviously very much admires Picard, but I think he is the standard for that XO role, which to the Journey friends, I think
to the journey
that it's just, you know, often they, I think, lament Chakotay and him being the head of HR, you know, as it were. And I'd say Riker definitely doesn't fall into that trap. He is not head of HR. He is the XO of the flagship of the Federation. Eat that, Chakotay.
Wait, it's Chuckles?
Chuckles. Eat that, Chuckles.
Chakotay. Okay. What about you? I mean, I know probably for a lot of this episode, Philip, you may disagree with a lot of people on Riker. How do you feel about Riker overall?
So many things. First off, to say, like, to me, it's only since I've been doing my rewatch of The Next Generation that I've come to appreciate Riker more, because I think more in the past, I've kind of seen Riker as sort of Picard's plus one. Like, I never really thought about, like, you know, it's Picard, Data, and the gang. And so I never really thought of, like, Riker as, like, oh, I mean, I don't not like him. But I never really thought of him as, you know, paying attention to his character and what he's all about. It's just more like, yeah, okay, he's one of the boys or girls. But I've come to appreciate him a little bit more. But also, I think he's actually started to annoy me a little bit as I've done my rewatch. Because he definitely has a unique personality, which I think we'll talk about. Because he's kind of manic personality, because he's very friendly, but he also shouts half of his lines. Like during just to have a regular conference, and I'll be like, "What? Why do you say that, Captain? I think we should do this." I'm like, "Why are you yelling? What's why? Why is the
Picard's old? He has sensitive hearing. I mean, don't be shouting everything."
But I will do appreciate what y'all are saying, because I think it's true, and I'm the kind of my fandom. Of Next Generation and Star Trek is always to really read into the world, maybe more than what's really going on. But I do see that Riker is running the ship. He is, like, controlling duty shifts. He's assigning personnel. He is running the ship, because you see Captain Picard kind of has, like, the strategic vision about what we're doing, but Riker's the one who's kind of pulling all the, you know, making sure all the ships are running in time and everyone's allotted what they need to, and they all have to come to Riker first. You know, he's the gateway. But yeah, I really think he did kind of step up a little bit more than what we saw in TOS, and it was definitely a lot there to this character.
What chain of command, right? That's what pops out in my mind when you're mentioning that.
I was going to say, like, that.
Is it Will or William?
He's like, it's F-U, sir.
and that's, you know, that's the episode where he, you know, Jellicoe comes, Jellicoe, right?
Yeah.
It's Jellicoe. Okay, Jellicoe comes on, is like, we're going to switch to a four-shift rotation, and Riker's like,
he loses his mind. I already hate you now.
And he's like, no, well, we do a three-shift rotation, and it kind of really works for us here, but, you know, that's where you get the impression of HR kind of representative, HR man in charge, kind of like, well, I'm going to run things, you know. Picard's, of course, at the top, but I'm the guy that kind of just gets things running smoothly and things go well, but okay.
I'm the one who actually sits on the bridge while Picard's sipping tea in his ready room all day.
Exactly, right? You kind of get that impression.
Well, I'd say two pieces that, like you were saying, most defines Riker is that interaction with Jellicoe, because it's so different than Picard, and I would say also his interaction with Commander Shelby, which... we can get to a little later, but I think that's, that is definitely a very important interaction as far as presenting his character to us.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, best of both worlds. We'll get to later for sure.
Dun, 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 dun.
So I don't want to touch on that too early. Let's try to pull back a little bit and rewind a little bit here. Season one, in Encounter, yes, exactly. Encounter Farpoint, we get this clean-shaven, fairly fit man who may be a little overbearing, maybe a little cardboard cutout-ish character. Yes, exactly. And then in season two, we get this dramatic shift. I mean, it's probably more of a dramatic shift in my mind. It's more of a dramatic shift from season two to season three, but visually and from a character point of view, like, it's probably season two that we really get the Riker that we know and love from season two on. The beard, right? The beard changes everything. We have season one, right? What do we have in season one? What Riker do we have in season one? We have
only we
the
had
Minuet
just talked
episode.
About season one, you know. Oh wait, no,
I know it's been a week, Daniel. Did you just, like, forget everything? Oh my goodness.
This is important that we talk about the transition, though. You understand what
yes,
I'm saying?
Yes.
So in season one, that we get the Biner episode. We get 110010, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And we get
I like how Daniel's acting like he doesn't know the exact episode. Please, listeners, he knows it. He's just trying to play cool.
And we get Hyde and Q, but then really, I mean, which are important episodes and we can talk about. But my point is, like, what happens? I mean, to me, in my mind, Riker is a fairly flat character in season one and becomes an interesting character in season two. Is it just the beard? Darren, is it just the beard that makes him interesting? What happens? What's going on there?
Oh, I'm just trying to pick out some thoughts of Riker in season two. We've just covered him so much in season one. I love the actual story of the beard, how it was just Jonathan Frakes coming back from the season hiatus with a beard, like planning to shave it off the first day. And the producers were like, hey, why did you keep that? And 7 years later, he never got to shave. But imagine now if he had come back with a goatee or mutton chops or, you know, a little, soul patch. We could have been a very different Riker.
Hipster Riker. Number one, are you wearing glasses?
No, it's Geordi's visor.
I'm reading a pad that you've never heard of before.
To be fair, I would, if I had the capability to grow a beard for 7 years, I would wear one if Counselor Troy would shave it off 7 years later.
Oh,
that's all I wanted
to say. In the bathtub, yes.
Well, that's true. I mean, obviously, you know, he takes care of his beard as he goes throughout the seven seasons. But if we need to imagine Riker not shaving for 7 years, we just have to go to Parallels. And we have the Borg-infested Riker with his super beard. That is what Riker would look like of 7 years of no shaving. We get everything. We get no beard Riker, good beard Riker, and then, oh my goodness, please shave Riker. So it's the full circle.
Which you have to say, that action figure was not that popular.
Well, okay, so Philip, what about you? I mean,
you said you didn't want to talk about it, but I won't talk about it too much. But I think the context for me does come from Best of Both Worlds, but I won't talk about it a lot. But I'll just say, you know, to me that episode marked, like, I can see Riker developing. But I'll go back to season two, like you were talking about. You know, season one, you know, the sort of the accusation, or maybe not even accusation, probably it was on purpose. Like, oh, Riker is the Kirk. Like, he's the Kirk guy. He's Jim Kirk, you know, going on the away mission, shooting phasers, getting the ladies. You know, hey, we're going to have that role. It's just not going to be the captain this time. But I think he was fun. He was definitely fun. And, you know, he laughed, told jokes, you know, was on the away missions. All that was season one. But I think season two, like, you know, our favorite, I can't believe I'm blanking on this episode, the Klingon episode, season two.
Matter of Honor.
But we love that episode here at Earl Grey, but that's because it shows Riker, like, this is, he's not just, you know, funny and action man, but he's someone who loves adventure and loves exploring. And hey, there's an opportunity to go hang out with the Klingons. I'm your guy, Captain. And he goes out there with gusto and he's ready for every experience. And we see his leadership qualities on the Klingon vessel. And it's like, oh, it's so clear. And so I think you definitely see, and by the time you hit to the Best of Both Worlds, where you have this, and again, if you don't want to go into it, we won't, but you see this comparison between what's a Shelby and what's a Riker. Like, to me, I see the seasoning of Riker, and it really didn't hit me
until the
Best of Both Worlds, that, yeah, we did kind of see Shelby-esque Riker in season one, but we did see him grow in two and three to become a little more gravitas. Because to me, I always, when I'm watching an episode with Riker and Picard, I always think, like, well, what if Riker was in command? Because you see him maybe making the rasher suggestion sometimes. I mean, not like Worf rash. You know, he doesn't say shoot
Captain,
it all.
Captain, I suggest we don't even look at them and shoot them now.
But also, I think maybe it may be just like it depends on, you know, was it where you stand is where you sit, that Riker can kind of give the other opinion just because he's not the captain. So he's able to kind of give the other options without having to, you know, if he's the one making the decision, he may have to make a more conservative plan. But I mean, I think you, just through season one and two and three, what you're talking about right now, Daniel, I think you do see an evolution of Riker, that he's not just the fun-loving, you know, was it Commander Babyface? But you know, it is kind of the stereotype that the beard gives you gravitas, as Data would say, right? But it's true. I think it's true. Not only was it the beard, it was also kind of what they had him doing. He just wasn't, I mean, he still had that making everyone laugh quality, but he's more of a commander.
And, you know, this is not a point that I wanted to touch on, but listening to you talk, it made me think, and I'm not saying Riker is better or worse or anything than anybody else, but
Kira.
In a time of, well, yes, well, it's not, come on. Technically, he did conquer Kira, so I'm not saying that he's better than Kira, but it did happen. Anyways,
don't let that wound heal, will you, Philip? You just keep pulling that scab off every time you get the chance.
But no, but seriously, like, I'm not, like, I really don't want to suggest that Riker is a better character than someone like Spock, because clearly they're very different characters. But we have in TOS, we have a very specific episode designed to point out that maybe Spock shouldn't be the captain. He probably isn't the best. But all throughout TNG, and I don't think any of the other second officers, or first officers, excuse me, we get this episode where, like, you know, we get this feeling that Riker could handle Picard's job. Maybe not as good as him. Because Picard is exceptional, but we get this idea that Riker can handle command, and obviously it's proven without a shadow of a doubt in Best of Both Worlds. Again, we'll get to that, but it is interesting because, you know, Spock kind of faces that challenge, and again, that's a very different situation. But you know, Kira doesn't. You know, reach that level. Obviously Chakotay doesn't, which is a huge, you know, kind of a criticism of Voyager, and even I guess T'Pol kind of doesn't have that either. So it's like Riker is the most feasible first officer, I think, or the most legitimate first officer. That's not the right word.
He's the most ambitious. I mean, he's the one who's there to command. I mean, because Spock will say, I don't seek command. You know, I'm here just
doesn't want it.
I'm serving the captain, and I'm a science officer, and, you know, a first officer, whatever. But, like, Riker, like, I want to be admiral by the time I'm 30. You know, I'm here to be large and in charge and all that stuff. And I think, you know, the other characters, because I think T'Pol would say she's probably reluctant, you know, commander, because she's there to serve or whatever. I mean, obviously, we see her growth. This is not Warp 5. But, you know, she has a lot of things going on with her. You know, Kira is sort of in an interesting position. She's more like the Bajoran representative than first officer. But, you know, obviously, it all carries out and she grows, too. And then Chuckles, that's just a whole different thing. Because I think Riker is your prototype or prototypical Starfleet officer. You know, in a good way, right? He's the guy. He wants to be ambitious. He wants to command a starship. I mean, he's us, right? He wants to command a starship, and he's working his way up through the ranks.
But does he want to command a starship?
Okay, hang on. That's what I was going to ask. Darren, what about you? Like, do you think, you know, of all of the first officers we get to see, I mean, do you not agree that he is technically the most ambitious, right?
He is, but I think his ambition is highly tempered when he gets posted to the Enterprise because,
yes,
you know, you can tell, like, he's on the fast track. He's, you know, on the way up, and he gets his number one, you know, posting on the Enterprise. But when I feel like I'm writing a sitcom. It's like, Commander Riker was posted on the Enterprise, but what he didn't expect to find was family, you know. But it's true. He found a family there, and he found his real calling of responsibility. And I think that's why he put the brakes on his career and didn't want to be promoted to captain, because he's like, okay, I need to take care of this ship, of this family, of these thousand people on the flagship of the Federation, and he really was the best person for that role, and he knew it.
Are we breaching this topic officially?
We were heading that way anyway. Okay. So
the infamous topic of, you know, Riker taking command, and there's a great article by our own Admiral Chris on Trek FM. Called Riker, Why Won't You Sit Down, where he writes about the sort of history of Riker rejecting commands. I think it's interesting about, I always think in universe, and then maybe that's just me being weird, but okay, he doesn't, you know, he's first officer on the hood, trailing slowly behind the Enterprise.
Really left his shadow, so exactly. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to.
But he, you know, he takes first officer on the Enterprise, even though he was at the Ares or something. And I forget where this is established. But anyway, but he rejects that command to become first officer of the flagship. Yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, okay, I can have my own dinky command, or I can be, you know, one more first officer on the flagship with this Captain Picard.
On the Enterprise, which is super famous, that name.
Right, and so I can, all right, gets that. And then in the middle of first season, Second season, he gets offered the, I can't even remember, by his dad. You know, Kyle Riker shows up, and he turns down that command, which I can get, right? He's only been there a year and a half. You know, okay, he wants to stay on there longer. But I think once we get to the Melbourne, in Best of Both Worlds, I'm like, and he's sitting down with Troy going, why am I still here? I'm like, it's a good question. I enjoy your character.
Because you would be dead if you got on the Melbourne.
Well, but I'm like, you know, after a while, it's like, I don't know why you're, because you're obviously capable. I mean, obviously you're enjoying it. I mean, and maybe that's fine. Like, his ambition has stopped, you know, other than to be a good officer. But like, climbing the ladder isn't important, like you just said. Because then it's just, you know, through the rest of the series, obviously he's still there. And then, you know, after Generations, one would argue at that point, one would think after the Enterprise D is destroyed, Riker would go take command and not stay again with the Enterprise E. But whatever. It's an interesting, you know, to his character of this guy who, by all good things, is the evil Admiral, Bad Admiral Riker. Where did that ambition go? And is that a conflict in what his character is?
With all due respect, Philip, Commander Riker's career goals and objectives are his own damn business. So maybe you should leave. No, but seriously, this is important. This is super important to who Riker is. I mean, and this is kind of a question that is never really answered. Like, we dance around it so much. And especially in of course, Best of Both Worlds, famously, we have that scene between Riker and who he trusts the most, Troy, and he literally says he doesn't even know why am I here, and she suggests, of course, that it's because you're happy, you're happy here, but and that maybe that's true, but I mean, do we have a theory? Like, Darren, how do you justify that in your mind? How is this where he wants to be, even though he's been completely career-driven his whole life? Like, what, he wants to be in that chair. He even states it, like, countless times in the show. What's going on there?
Well, but maybe he doesn't want to sit in the chair. I mean, there are many people in many different professions where they get overpromoted, much like how captains don't really want to be admirals. They don't really want to be away from their ship. And, yeah, I mean, he can do the most good. Not that he feels like he's dodging the big decisions by being a commander, but he's able to, you know, because think about it this way. If, let's say, Picard didn't come back after not Best of Both Worlds, but like, you know, Chain of Command, like, not that he died, but like, he just got reassigned or he went somewhere. Now Riker's ahead of the Enterprise. Well, who's going to be his second in command?
And data.
Okay.
Data.
Okay. So data gets a red shirt, and we Wesley comes back from the academy or something, and he's sitting at the con again. But, you know, it's just, I think, you know, while we'll touch on when he actually does sit down, you know, later. But I feel it's not just happiness; it's that I think he knows, you know, in his heart that he's like, this is where I can do the most good, where I'm best suited. And, you know, he's young. He's a young guy. There is actually quite a bit of time for him to become captain. He doesn't need to break a Kirk record or something and, you know, get that fourth pip.
Well, like in Best of Both Worlds, you have that admiral saying, you know, Riker's just standing still and he's going to see all these people going past him like Shelby. But I think, and Tim, I don't remember. I know Daniel has seen this episode more recently than I have, so I don't remember that well. But Second Chances, because the overlining in the Triker storyline, you know, because remember it's that, you know, and we're never really told specifically what happened, but that Riker left Troy on Beta Z to pursue career opportunities, and that's why they broke up, because his ambition was more important than his, you know, love life. And so that's what happens, and that has always driven him. And so, you know, Second Chances is like, that's like the reminder of, yes, that was him. That's always been Riker, that, you know, Will is telling Deanna about Thomas. You know, he'll break your heart again, because I know me. I'm always going to put career before relationships, or at least that was the me when I beamed out of that planet all those years ago. And so, again, it's always hard to, like, and I know why, because, look, I didn't want Jonathan Frakes to leave, or, you know, I enjoyed seeing him for 7 years on Next Generation. But just, you know, as far as making that character point, like you said, it's never explained in Best of Both Worlds other than, it's what I want to do and leave. Stop asking about it. Like, okay, it'd be nice to know that. Why? To hear your thought process.
Okay, this isn't something that I marked down that we should talk about, but I actually did want to bring this up. And I'm going to ask both of you, point blank. I know a lot of fans, you know, kind of have this alternate history view of what might have happened. So Darren, would you have been okay with a TNG that dropped? Say something, you know, didn't work out with Patrick Stewart. As terrible as that might have been, would you have been okay, or would you have been interested at least in seeing what a Riker commanded Enterprise with a Shelby, you know, Shelby second officer, first officer, sorry, I keep saying second officer, but first officer Shelby, would you have been interested in that after Best of Both Worlds? If they could not have somehow reconciled that and Jonathan Frakes became captain of the Enterprise, would you have been interested in that?
I see. So the first couple seasons do exist with Captain Picard, and now yeah. Patrick Stewart's left the show, you know.
In therapy after the Borg incident.
I think... I don't know. It's part of me says, well, because we've experienced Picard and we know how good he is, there'd be a lot of, well, why can't Picard just come back? Like, he's such a great character, and that's, you know, a lot of what the show's built on. But, you know, Riker, I think at that point had been really well established, especially after the events of Wolf, you know, of Best of Both Worlds. He, you know, shows himself to be a captain. You know, that would have been, I think what would have been really interesting is if he was the captain maybe for a season, and then Picard like came back, you know, in season, would that be
Pulls
six?
Of Beverly.
Pulls of Beverly and comes back. I think that would be interesting, where now you get a whole different dynamic where the crew is used to Riker's command style and now they're shifting back to Picard. I think that would have, you know, that would have been really interesting, if almost as if Patrick Stewart had gone on like hiatus to shoot, you know, three X-Men films or something.
What about you, Philip? Like, would you have been okay with a Riker slash?
I think it would. I would have been, I mean, again, and nobody wants to lose Picard more than I would want to. But just from a theoretical standpoint, no, yeah. I think the problem would be Shelby. That would be the one people like. Her? Is she in this? And so, you know, I think
Data kills her in a secret mystery arc and it takes us five episodes to figure out who did it.
I like Shelby.
Well, I think nothing against the actress. I think they just wrote her too extreme. And we want, you know, a dichotomy to Riker. I'm like, yeah, but don't make her stupid and annoying. I mean, you can do the rash and young up and comer, but don't make her like no one that nobody likes. I mean, that's, you know, I think it oversimplified that thing. And so maybe if they kind of settled her down a little bit, I mean, not that she couldn't still be rash and ambitious and basically the female version of Kirk, or the female version of first season Riker. Cause she did not have a beard either, I noticed. But don't make her like just contemptuous of the guy.
Yeah. The one thing that like, I think all people on the planet or all human beings would understand is if you're going after your boss's job, the one thing you don't want to tell your boss is that you're going after their job. It makes no sense. Why would you do that?
Guess who's going to recommend Captain Picard who the replacement should be.
I think you should be on the front line, Commander Shelby, into the Borg-infested supercube. Good luck.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bossman, but you're in my way. I would like your position. No, you don't do that. Okay.
In the Best of Both Worlds behind the scenes, they had a great interview with the actress of Shelby, and they show how she didn't really watch the show before that episode, and it actually worked out good because she's like, oh yeah, if I'd watched the show and I had known like how good of a character Riker was and how tightly knit this whole group was, I couldn't have delivered my lines. But because I had no idea who this guy was, I had no problem just saying you were in my way. But afterwards I'm like, how could you say that to Riker? He's number one.
You're my number one. Anyway.
Yeah.
You're my number one dad.
I still say the Ferengi had no idea what that meant. There was no reason to give a weird sideways glance at the Ferengi.
Well, there's no way to shoehorn this in, so I'm just going to blast it out right now. Commander Riker, which is Jonathan Frakes, but it's Commander Riker. Commander Riker has the great smile. Anytime anyone is in an uncomfortable position, usually Picard, but it can be anyone, is in this uncomfortable position where they have to do something that humiliates them, you just have this sort of blank-eating grin on Riker's face in the background where he is enjoying every minute that's not him, whether it's like Troy discovering her holographic fantasy version in Barclay's program, or Picard having to declare his love to Troy's mom, or what? Oh, doesn't matter what it is.
I love that.
Or Data is going, you know, limerick, sir? And Riker's just like, ha ha, stupid android.
I love the Risa episode where he gives Captain Picard, you know, the statue, yep, and yep, you know, it's Jamal Ron, yeah, and it's like, I love it. I love it every single time.
It's like, Riker, I'm gonna get
okay.
him.
Yeah, and he knows. I love it. I love when Picard makes that realization. He's like, Riker, and he puts it under the blanket, and it's like, no, I don't want this. And it's hilarious.
Just the Picard Riker relationship, I think, is very unique because even season one, I think it starts this way, where you know Picard is this, you know, he's in charge, and nobody speaks Picard, but Riker does. And you can tell that they have that special relationship and that Riker recognizes, hey, when we're in front of the crew, I'm going to do X. But when it's just us, I have no fear to go, you know. And it, to me,
I mean to your face. Yeah, yeah.
But he even does it in a funny way, like in that Captain's Holiday episode. He like goes in the turbo lift and Captain's car is, you know, is this matter over? Yes. So this is why you should go to Risa. It's a great plan.
No, it's true. And it's like, you know, it's tough when you're watching Star Trek because like you have things to compare it to, right? So it's like, so the first officer captain relationship with Riker and Picard, you instantly compare it to Spock and Kirk. But it's not like that at all. Like, it's a totally different relationship. And I don't want to say it's better or worse or different, but it's different. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, so, like, the Riker-Picard relationship is beautiful in its own way. Like, I absolutely agree with you, Philip. Like, season one Riker-Picard from, you know, when Picard says, you know, Commander Riker, stop myself from making an ass in front of children. Like, you know, like, that. Like, it's a totally different relationship from season three,
right,
Picard-Riker, or season five Picard-Riker, or season seven or movie Picard-Riker. And it's like, I agree. Yeah, wholeheartedly.
Again, I don't, it's Captain's Holiday. Remember, it's the line where, like, Picard tells Riker, like, is there anyone on this ship who's involved in this? And Riker's like, I think there's two ensigns and Deck 32.
Okay, so we've talked about Riker for a little bit, and we've kind of danced around this subject, but let's talk about it. You know, we've mentioned that Riker is the pseudo-Kirk of TNG. Let's talk about his romantic relationships. Let's talk about
Daniel,
how
he just likes to do foot washing. I don't know why you're making a big deal.
He just likes, as Philip says, he likes shoving every relationship that he ever has right in Troy's face.
Yes, Commander, we've heard it more than once.
And endangered the entire ship by bringing a psychotropic drug game that infected the entire crew.
Or disrupted a society that has no gender.
Come on, come on, come on. Let's give him a little bit of a break.
That is giving him a little bit of a break.
He had a lot of fun. That's the break we're giving him.
I actually think, and I don't know that this is true, but I imagine that it is. In my mind, if I thought of like the ratio, I mean, I know that TNG has more episodes than seasons than TOS does, but if I imagine the ratio the ratio of Riker sleeping with guest stars / women to Kirk sleeping with guest stars / women,
do you
bet
have a pie chart
Riker's is higher
in there somewhere, Dan?
I don't. Do you guys think that's true? Like, we see so much of it.
I don't know. I get a feeling that Kirk is, that's almost just a stereotype at this point. I think, yes, there is some element of that in Kirk, but I don't think it's nearly as much as it's made out in the afterthought.
So you're saying that it is more in Riker than...
I'd say Riker, yeah, would be more written. He's, yeah.
I agree.
Written to be that sort of character. But as again, with a stable relationship sitting right next to him on the bridge.
He literally sleeps with an it. I mean, I don't want to be insensitive, but I mean, he does. He has
a non-gender individual.
And he gets and let's refer to Riker. He gets very emotional and very, defensive about the it. Like he goes to the planet and goes to the court and is like, "This is my it. Don't."
Fortunately, he says things more eloquently than Daniel, but yes, he does.
than I can, right? Here.
That's why Riker has a higher ratio than Daniel. Anyway, I don't think, other than the potential matter of perspective, other than that episode, I don't think Riker's ever forcing. I mean, it's nothing untoward that Riker is doing with any of these women. I mean, in other words, other than matter of perspective.
Okay,
the other one that you,
okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
but I mean, it's we're Kirk sometimes is a little, I mean, I know it was the 60s, but sometimes a little forcey, McForcey. But, Riker, it just happens. Hey, what can I say? I got the charm. What you gonna do? All I say is, you want to hear some jazz in my quarters, and one thing leads to another, and there's a foot washing. I mean, it's. I think Riker loves life. If we want to put a positive spin and not just condemn him as, he loves life. He loves good food, loves good women.
Completely falls for a hologram. All that stuff.
That's right. Yeah, because that doesn't happen to every single character.
Good point.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, it gets him out of a jam. Probably the only time in Star Trek, right? That he it actually pulls him out of a situation that he wouldn't be unfamiliar with.
Which I was, for everyone who again, I know I always sound so defensive. Anyone who talks about non-TNG continuity, if you're watching Future Imperfect in season 4 and you've never seen
0010001
in season 1, you will have no clue what the big reveal is in that episode in season 4. You're like, oh, it's they just showed a woman. What's the big deal about it? Yeah, well, if 3 years ago this meant something.
Well, and to tie on to that episode, I remember when we were chatting in the other side of the bridge earlier this week, I had I kind of lost my head for a moment as I was thinking of the utter possibilities of if they reshot the parts of that episode nowadays. Does that make sense? Yeah, and Future Imperfect, because he's supposed to be, 15, 20 some odd years in the future, which we're kind of at now. If all the actors who are still alive came back and reshot, through green screen and editing all the future parts of that, I think that would have been, that'd be really fun. I don't think they would ever do that, but I think it would be really fun.
Yeah, because I'd really love to know how they got Ambassador Tom Holland.
Well, okay, that actor is bad, but you could CGI him in.
He's a Romulan. You don't really know that he's dead.
They're tricksters. But yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, because we already talked about Riker Troy in previous romance episode. But it's, and I've come to accept Daniel's philosophy on this, that the 24th century has different romantic notions than what we have. But you can have a really, really good friend who you still make out with occasionally, though later she'll forget that she ever kissed you with facial hair.
Right.
And then still have relationships in which somehow you involve her in, though in not that way. It's very complex, but yes, Riker, ladies, it's a thing.
You know what I just realized? I realized the moment that Picard gets back at Riker for the idol in Captain's Holiday. It's all the way in Nemesis where he's stepping out into the turbolift and he turns around and says, "Mr. Troy," because the look on Riker's face is like, oh, I didn't even think of that. I just assumed, oh my goodness. And oh, that's such a great shot.
We've done a little bit of a recap here on the Riker and Troy relationship, and that's fine. Like we've talked about that before in the TNG relationships episode. It's fairly normal for 24th century, but we don't have to get into it. let's talk about Riker family issues. Okay. So we have in season two, this makes me shudder, Riker's father, who has had a previous relationship with Dr. Pulaski.
Oh, kind of
uncomfortable. Does that make that makes me a little squeamish. Like, I can't even think about it. It makes me a little uncomfortable.
I'm laughing because it reminds me of Lower Decks. Where is he from? Canada, I think. Cousin in Canada. No, he's from Alaska. Riker is from Alaska.
Well, hey, I mean, if people can think that Alaska is an island, people can definitely think it's part of Canada.
So, and we don't know what happened in the future because obviously England invaded France by then. So if I'm going to do a little armchair Troy therapy session, so Riker's mom died young. So he has some mommy issues. That's why he's always with the ladies. Okay. He's still looking for mom.
Unlike Data, whose mother is also an android that he can't tell the truth to ever.
Let's just not. There's
or
no
Picard's mama,
about
who
it.
We see in the crazy, weird future.
Mama. Yeah, okay.
Or Doherty's mom, who's dead, you know, inside the gas.
Okay. Let's move past Riker's mom issues and father issues because it's only in one episode. Let's move on to something else that's more interesting, his family issues.
And Riker only acknowledges that it's in one episode because he yells at everyone else for not talking to their dads in every other episode.
Okay, I get it.
Mr. Wolf, he's your father.
We should talk about Thomas Riker, shouldn't we? This is kind of important. He's not his brother. He's not his twin. He is himself. Thomas Riker is Commander Riker. We get this really interesting sci-fi concept that Thomas Riker is Commander Riker 8 years ago before,
right,
you know, whatever
Lieutenant
happened.
Riker, I think, at that time.
He's Lieutenant Riker. And it's interesting, right? I mean, I find that compelling. It's one of the few times that I get this, like, the split screen kind of, I'm Riker, blah, 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 blah. Like, I like it. I actually can get along. I can go with it.
Well, you know me. I love a good Mirror Universe episode, and I think this is as close as we get to a Mirror Universe Riker, but it's on a twist. It's not like, oh, you're me growing up over different circumstances. It's like, you're literally me. Like, the bulk of our life was identical, and, you know, I think what I love most about Thomas Riker is honestly that he shows up again in Deep Space Nine. Defiant,
yeah.
Yeah, that's just such a great episode, and that reveal is great because you're like, oh, yay, crossover. Oh, no. Pulling the mutton chops off.
You
know,
that. You can tell he's the evil twin. He has a goatee.
I wonder if another version he pulled off the goatee and just left the mutton chops, and that was how he knew he was Thomas Riker. But no, anyway. But no, I think it's a very well written episode, and it deals with, you know, we talk about, you know, the split screen effects and all these things, but at its heart, it's the road less traveled. The, you know, what if I had made a decision? You know, Kirk deals with the same thing in the Nexus. He's like, what if I didn't, you know, go back into Starfleet? What if I didn't go into my barn bedroom and, you know, talk to Antonia? But no, I think it's a great episode with Thomas Riker. I think he's a really, for a double, he's a really compelling character.
Well, I think the interesting thing about, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but I think the interesting thing about this episode, and something that I do think TNG did not do a great job of, is telling our characters' backstories. Because we'll get largely like, oh, I have family issues, because everyone has family issues apparently in Star Trek.
But and no interpersonal conflict.
exactly. But you never hear like the in-between. Like, you'll hear like the first ship they were assigned and the Enterprise, but never their in-between life. But here it's revealed, I don't know, I think for the first time, that Riker was a yellow shirt. You know, so he came from that background. So we knew he was some Ensign Helmsman when he was on the Pegasus, on, you know, with that. But he grew up to be a yellow shirt lieutenant. So I was like, oh, well, that's interesting, because you always wonder, what do these people do before they're in
command?
Well,
it makes you think. I mean, I've always had the impression that, you know, people were in one track kind of their whole time. Like you get to the academy and you go into either the science track or the security track or the command track, but maybe it's not like that. Maybe it's much more focus driven.
Worf and Geordi both change
exactly.
tracks.
Exactly. I mean, if you think about it, it makes more sense that, you know, and Worf changes back to command, you know, later on. And I think it's just a really unique, I think that's probably more the norm is, you know, okay, now I'm going to focus on command because I've, you know, been a good lieutenant doing, you know, this area, but you apparently have to have a red shirt to to sit in the center chair. So, but yeah, I think, you know, anytime we get our main characters in another color shirt, it's always fun, a fun ride.
And let's not forget that it took, you know, Thomas Riker a good, I don't know, 10 minutes to get Kira where he wanted her. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, they're different series. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Will Riker could have done the same.
Yeah. Okay, so...
And Troy would have been right behind him.
Watching. So, okay, let's... Okay, so we've talked... And actually, I did want to mention this just briefly, and I was just thinking about this before. If you include Thomas Riker, which maybe you would argue that you shouldn't, but if you include Riker as a character, he appears in more versions of Star Trek than any other character. Is that true? Right? Like,
it's true. Everything but TOS.
Everything but TOS, right? TNG, Deep Space Nine. Voyager in Death Wish, Enterprise in
their season finales.
And their favorite, yes.
Their favorite finale series finale.
Season finale. Yeah. And the love letter to Star Trek.
So that's interesting. But, okay, so, we've talked a lot about Riker. Let's head towards his finale. We've talked a little bit about why he may have rejected his calling to be a captain, but let's talk about it. He finally does accept this, right? Sometime between Insurrection and Nemesis.
When he grows back the beard.
Yes, exactly. Well, he's no longer affected by the youthful field, which apparently...
But it's too late. He's already engaged to Troy.
He can't back out anymore. He accepts promotion and then, you know, kind of a, you know, a lot of people kind of have this concept of what the Titan is, right? And the Titan lives on in the novels and stuff. I haven't read the novels or anything, but we get a lot of future Trek kind of conceptualized. And,
check out Literary Treks, only on Trek.
Exactly, exactly. So let's look at Commander William Riker in Encounter at Farpoint, and let's look at Captain William Riker in Nemesis. Are we, Darren, are you happy with his, I mean, that's 10 years, right? 10 or 11 or 12, maybe?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, years of this character. Are you happy where he starts and where he ends up? Do you think it's a good character arc?
I am. I think more so than other characters, he progresses quite a bit, and I think... Yeah, he's a fun character. He grows, but he doesn't change. He doesn't change who he is. He doesn't change the way he, you know, commands, the way he leads, you know, the way he loves, and, you know, the way he, you know, just interacts with his family. So no, I say I'm very happy with what they did with the Riker character. I don't have any, you know, regrets or things I wish they had included or gone to. What do you think, Philip?
I think, you just took away Daniel's leadership, and that's cool. But I think that, I was happy. I mean, everyone wanted that. Like, you can't end the Next Generation story without Riker getting command. And I think it's interesting that they did go with the, you know, the marriage to Troy, which I think, you know, obviously it was logical because they did set it up an Insurrection with them kind of getting back together. And with her memory being erased for some reason. And I think it was, and it is interesting, you know, Captain Riker, just think about, you know, Captain Riker, just saying that, is definitely cool. I almost wish my only, and it's just a picky thing because I don't like anything about Nemesis anyway, but if they had actually shown him being promoted. Like, I know he just walked into the ready room and he had the captain's rank, which maybe that's fine. Maybe this is just me being mean, and it's probably fine that they did it that way. But just, as you know, see Jean-Luc, you know, put that last pip.
He should have been
there.
The one to be in the ceremony and put the pip on.
Yeah, but it was cool to kind of walk in, because if I remember Nemesis, this may just be my viewing when I was probably closing one eye anyway. Like, you really don't notice that fourth pip right away in that scene, but, like, the camera turns and you finally see it, and, you know, Picard calls him captain, and it's also awesome. But yeah, I think getting married and the Titan, I mean, like I said, from a character in world, should have happened after Generations. You know, he should have never made it to the E. It just didn't make sense. Like, it doesn't even make sense at all in any way, shape, or form. But you know, him, at least in our love note to the Next Generation, if we'll call Nemesis that, if these are the voyages for Enterprise, then yeah, obviously Captain Riker, USS Titan, with a new counselor, Troy, his wife.
And Gilligan, the skipper, too.
And Wesley as assistant chief engineer.
Argyle.
I mean, I feel like that's unfair. I think that to us as viewers of the show, yeah, it makes sense. The D is gone. The E is being built. You know, pick something else. But you know, I mean, as a character, I don't know why that transition would facilitate or force him to be captain. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, maybe he was, you know, well, his girlfriend broke the ship. Maybe he felt responsible.
It was Imzadi, not girlfriend. Imzadi implies I can still see other women, clearly.
There's a lot of subtext in the Imzadi word.
It's soulmate with benefits, or I don't know, it's something.
Soulmate with benefits. That's actually a good title. We should probably use that.
Writing it down.
But, I mean, okay. All right, fine. Whatever. I mean, I like Riker. We all like Riker, I think.
Well, I should let you know, I've asked them to make Commander Riker Day next month. So I'm thinking of putting an entry
I'll
myself.
I'll be on the bridge.
You know, okay. Well, all right. In closing, I do have to say that there's actually a lot of ground to cover that we didn't get to this time. Commander Riker is a really robust and interesting character, and there's really facets to his character that we weren't able to cover this time. You know, we can't fit it all into one episode, and I guarantee you, we here at Earl Grey, we will talk about Commander Riker again and again. He's an integral part of the show. He's a very interesting character. You know, the dynamic that he provides is super great, but really, I mean, Commander Riker is only one small part of Star Trek, and not the only thing that has been talked about here on Trek FM. So here is a look at what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
A piece of the action commentary.
Wouldn't that be amazing if you went to a solar system and Spock was like, okay, Kirk, you're not going to believe this, but I'm pretty sure there's a Death Star here.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could just go to a Death Star, you know?
And he'd be like, no, there isn't. Holy cow, there is. Oh my God, that's awesome.
Earl Grey.
TNG Season 1 Recap.
And we get to see some junior officers that Lieutenant LaForge is now in command of.
Instant pep talk and miss I don't know what button to push.
That's what happens when you leave the entire senior crew off.
The Ready Room.
Affliction and Divergence.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way. But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. You kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this.
The Orb.
Implications of genetic enhancement.
Miles slowly kind of gets to know these other characters. He's a little bit more comfortable with him, but he's still kind of at arm's length because they don't have that normal sense of control, we would call normal sense of control, that Julian does.
To the journey!
The Borg.
Some people might really get on my case for saying this, but I think the Borg were bigger baddies and more threatening and more scary in TNG than they ever were on Voyager.
Warp 5.
Enterprise Season 3 with Larry Nemechek.
All of a sudden, UPN got put under Les Moonves, the head honcho of CBS, the master TV network dealmaker, and kind of looked at this thing, and he was not all caught up in the goldenness of the 90s and the aughts, and he's like, you guys aren't paying your own way.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Those TV shows were nerds. And nerds liked those TV shows because, like, of what they were. And Alphas was actually a pretty cool nerd. And people didn't seem to like it because it was just a little bit too tough looking. Like, yeah. It maybe knows how to throw a football.
Literary Treks.
Slings and arrows, the oppressor's wrong.
And I'm curious to see, the next time I go back and watch Homefront Paradise Lost, how much this adds to the experience for me, knowing all this stuff that was going on and knowing how much more involved Layton's plans were than what we knew about just from the episodes.
Matterstream.
Star Trek Axanar with Alec Peters and Richard Hatch.
If you've ever experienced war or any kind of conflict where everything is life and death, there's a certain kind of resolve, truth, experience that you come to that I don't think too many people can understand or ever really empathize with.
And introducing our newest show, Melodic Treks, covering the music of Star Trek.
Alexander Courage and the TOS theme.
Roddenberry, in fact, wrote words for Courage's Star Trek theme song, not because he expected the lyrics to be sung on television or anything like that, but just so that by doing, he could claim credit as the song's co-creator, and therefore receive half the royalties from the song.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. We have three new iTunes reviews, guys. We have one from Dante Hopkins, who says, great breakdown of the various aspects of TNG, keeping us fans thinking and talking about it. Though there hasn't been a Trek on TV in almost 9 years, it's shows like yours that keep us fans engaged. Keep up the great work, guys. Looking forward to more.
Right. Oh, thank you. That's great.
I think we'll do one next week just because of this.
We also have another 5-star review from Aslan16, who says, I love this show. It's a very fresh take on TNG and adheres to the same excellent and professional standards that Trek FM has always delivered. It's a welcome new addition to the Trek FM family and a great joy to listen to. Thanks to all the hosts and to Chris, of course, for knocking the ball out of the park once more.
Now, we don't actually play baseball in Next Generation. That is only on Deep Space Nine.
We play Parisi Squares. It's a very dangerous sport.
Yeah, we don't let Daniel play. He's a little too young. But we really appreciate it, Aslan.
And we have Janie, who says, very interesting podcast. So I
think it's very interesting how many Y's are in that name, but I think we appreciate it. And I think this is actually a Treksmas miracle, because did each of us wish for an iTunes review? Because we got one for each of us.
For the new year. But no, we really appreciate all of the iTunes reviews and comments. They do help us, you know that we're going in good directions, talking about, you know, great things and, you know, putting together the best show we can for you guys.
And even if the anonymous ones who just left us stars will appreciate it, you know, much like Starbucks, I'll take all the stars I can get. But really, everyone who listens, we want to know what we're doing great, what we're doing, you know, not as great. But yeah, please let us know and please keep listening.
And if everyone wants to share their thoughts on today's show, they can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there and choose to send to Earl Grey. That will come to all three of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page on Trek.fm to send to us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter using the username trekfm. Before we go, we'd also like to ask you to please support our sponsor, who makes it possible for us to bring Earl Grey and all of our other Trek FM shows to you each week. Audible.com is a great way for you to read all the books you've ever wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. There are many Next Generation books available on Audible, including The Devil's Heart, read by Gates McFadden, Dr. Beverly Crusher, of course, and Q in Law, read together by both John DeLancey, who is Q, and Majel Barrett, who is the computer voice, and The Walks on Troy. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial, to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today, and catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read, or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Also, help us continue to bring Earl Grey to you each week by getting your alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi. You'll find them at trekfm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring our show to you every single week. And Darren, where would people find you each week if they were looking just to talk to you?
You can find me on Twitter under Dr. Sci-Fi, that's DrSciFi, or on my other podcast, The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, where we're covering sci-fi novels this month. And I just had a great interview with Diane Carey, the author of my favorite Star Trek book, Ship of the Line.
And Philip, how about you?
You can find me at number one TNG. Oh, wait, no, that's Riker. You can find me at NC Public Servant. NC stands for North Carolina. NC Public Servant. And where can we find you, Daniel?
Anyone can find me at OneUpDan. That's on Twitter. And that is the number one, not the word.
Never the word. Never, never the word.
I mean, who would want to be number one?
All right, guys. Well, Commander Shelby has been riding me like a horse, so I've got to get going. So maybe I'll see you guys on Holodeck 2.
No, I don't think you will. I'm going to just stay in my quarters. Live long and prosper.
Make it so.
Engage.
Fire.